Hey, this is Mike from the High Hash Rate Podcast. Before we get started, I just want to do a brief shout out to a partnership of ours, the Freedom Festival 2024 in the heart of New England on May 4th. Participate in a unique celebration where the pursuit of freedom, health, and community values come together through engaging activities and inspiring experiences. Immerse yourself in all things Bitcoin. That's right, including Bitcoin speakers, Bitcoin music, Texas Slim's Cattleman's Feast Barbecue, Bitcoin workshops, and etc. Participate in interactive demonstrations like parkour, cold plunge, wow, that sounds fun, hot tub, a soccer contest, and a raffle with prizes. Buy your tickets today. You can enter our affiliate link, HighRate20, for a 20% discount. You could also visit, for more information, massadoption.net. Anyway, on to our show.
Screw it. Here we go.
Throws out the idea that maybe we should not be doing this. You know, perhaps we should not be orange belly. Perhaps we should, you know, be like the soldier or be like the stoic, you know, that continues to learn their own and guide their own path and continues
exactly.
to get better on their own way.
Be an example of a living example.
Yeah.
Right? This is an element of Christianity. It's don't proselytize and go about and try to convert people. It's not a successful endeavor most of the time. Sometimes it can be dangerous.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in. This is a special edition of High Hash Rate. We've collaborated with the Canadian Bitcoiners, our Canadian Bitcoiner podcast, Why Bitcoin, Rock Paper Bitcoin, and several others, doing a special episode on orange pilling. How we think
on
about
the having
pilling.
Too. It's on the having, right?
And yeah. Yes, this is coming out as you're listening to this on the
okay.
having.
Thank
so,
you.
Boom, huge day. This is a huge, this is a huge holiday in the industry. And we're taking this time to cover the topic of orange pilling and discuss what the effective strategies are and how to think about what it really means to orange pill and what your goal should be in orange pilling. And then we also cover the topic of what to do after you've kind of what you might consider orange pill. Once somebody's taken the dive, they've gone down the rabbit hole, they bought Bitcoin, what do they do with it? How do they secure it? Well, our partner, Bitbox, is the solution that I recommend to a lot of people. I don't think it's for everybody, but it is for me in certain situations, and it is for a lot of my family and friends, and it might be for you. So we've partnered with them. Bitbox makes the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's secure, open source, and it's a Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience, in my opinion, in the industry. I use it to guarantee that I will always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you have a multi-sig, if you have some other hardware wallet solution, maybe you've got it in a safe, maybe you've got it somewhere safe place, you don't take it with you everywhere you go. What if you get stuck on the other side of the world? What if you don't know when you can get back? What if you want to have some access to your Bitcoin? This is why I think the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet, super discreet, looks like a thumb drive, really great user experience. You can plug it right into your Android phone, keeps your keys in cold storage, allows you to sign a transaction on any device and broadcast it. If you want to buy a Bitbox hardware wallet, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE, no spaces, all one word, and you'll get 5% off your purchase if you go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. Check them out.
It's we're not recording this on 420, 2024, but that date exists, and I thought that was... That's like an interesting thing to record on or like to release on, because that date is like, it's like a meme, you know, that's all.
420, 2024 or just 420?
420, but the fact that it's 2024.
Well, it's a palindrome. So 420, 2024 is the same.
Oh, it is a palindrome.
Backwards.
You're fucking yeah. right. It's a fucking palindrome.
But also
date.
This episode's coming out on the 19th. If we're doing the halving. So it's So maybe we should record a special intro for the
not really applicable
for the cannibal episode and just attach that to the beginning.
That's true.
I don't know. Yo, so this is the special. This is a special episode that we're putting out. There's no guest. There's I was reached out to by Sly Goomba Jeff from Why Bitcoin, and I was also reached out to by the guys at the Canadian Bitcoin podcast, who we've had on the show. We've had Len, and we've been on their show. And there's a few others, Rock Paper Bitcoin. Those guys are participating. And we decided that we were all going to release, and I think there's multiple other podcasts that are doing this. Yeah, I think it's, I don't know the exact number or who's participating other than who I've already mentioned. There's several others. They're all releasing a special episode on the halving date, which we're currently recording on April 16th. The projected date was supposed to be 420 for months. It looked like we were going to get the meme halving, but the hash rate has been too high. So the halving date is looking more like it's going to be on April 19th, which is still pretty significant, at least to this podcast, because that is the date of it's our 2-year anniversary since we put out that first episode.
Is it really 2 years? You checked this out?
Wow. So it's April. It's easy to remember because April 19th is my birthday. And the first episode came out on my birthday.
Your birthday's on the halving.
How old are you gonna be? It looks like it's going to be. I'm going to be 37. So, yeah, the first episode we put out was with Brandon Quittam, the Mycelium of Money author. We had him on again at the end of the year in 2022 for our only live in-person podcast episode. But yeah, so the halving is happening on the anniversary of this podcast. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen on 420 because that also would have been great for high hash rate. But yeah, but the whole point of this special episode has nothing to do with high hash rate, has nothing to do with the halving, or at least the halving being on 420. It's about talking about orange pilling, and I think the different shows are going to kind of give their pitch, their personal pitch, how they approach orange pilling other people. And we're going to kind of follow that theme tonight.
Okay.
We're going to dissect the nature of a good orange pilling strategy. Cause I don't think that one approach or one message is necessarily appropriate, because for every person you meet, right? Every person that you interact with, every person that you try to talk to about Bitcoin. So I think that it's probably worth having that discussion about what you should be taking into consideration, based on who you're talking to, your knowledge level, your being aware of your financial literacy, your financial savvy, right? And being aware of other people's perception or other people's understanding of your financial savvy. I mean, if you are like a financial advisor or a Wall Street banker, and you're trying to convince your family and friends, or just your colleagues, your peers, I think you have a different level of financial savvy and authority when you're speaking to other people who are going to be more inclined to trust your judgment or trust your understanding of the financial system, of saving, of investing, than if you are, somebody who works, you weave baskets underwater for the U.S. Navy. Like, your understanding of financial products and derivatives and saving and interest rates, I mean, that's, people are not going to treat you as an authority on those subjects. So it's probably not best to, rely on those types of arguments. Stuff like that. What's your approach, Mike? Generally, just very broadly, have you been very successful?
Can I go back just a tad?
Please do.
And I think it's I want to go back just a tad, and I think it's kind of incredible that all of these podcasters, all these shows, are coming together and making that sort of a show that will have a perspective, as you're talking about, to, you know, come at it from different angles.
Right, right. I think that whether or not you listen to one of these pitches, these unique pitches, and you agree with it, if it's effective in your mind, or you think it's a terrible strategy, I think you can still learn from that and incorporate good parts, or maybe recognize weak arguments that you might be tempted or you might have used in the past, and just kind of seeing somebody else lay those out. It might just provide you a fresh viewpoint, a fresh perspective, so you can improve, or you can change the way you approach it.
So I've tried a few different tactics, you know, and none of them seems to sort of pan out on a first try. That doesn't happen. I'm thinking it doesn't happen for many, unless they're like really good at it. Michael Saylor might be a first trier, you know, but even him.
I don't think it's possible to really. I mean, it depends on what your goal is. It depends on
you're talking about
consider
changing
a successful
worldview,
interaction.
You know, you're talking about
right,
someone.
Okay, sure.
You're changing someone's completely. You know, you're taking their concept of something so. Like, it took me four. I still haven't figured this out, but it took me 4 years to understand even what fiat is. You know, like
right.
even to get to the level of going like, okay, what am I actually involved in here, and like, how deep does it go, or is it really this fucking evil? Like, or,
I think that's
serious?
A great place. I think that's a great place to start, because going back to what you said, you know, trying to change somebody's entire worldview. So, should that be your goal? If you have, you know, this is your first interaction with somebody, you have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, even an hour, even if you have multiple hours and they are a captive audience who is really interested in what you're explaining. Do you think that it is realistic or productive to make your goal in that short initial interaction to change their entire worldview, or should you create a much narrower scope of what your intentions are and how you measure success.
First of all, you have to assess the amount of time you have immediately.
Which is hard to do because you may not know.
Exactly. You have to create a hook to that person.
Right.
To get them to hook in, right? They need to at least give you their ear. So you have to understand, you know, where they're coming from completely, in a way, to do that. That's what I think.
How do you gather that information? How do you assess that? How do you intuit, or is it instinct?
It probably goes to a little bit of what you were talking about earlier. I mean, if we all size each other up, you know, based on appearances even. See, it comes from that, you know, you can like say that this person is a little bit more understanding about taking care of things, like he puts himself together, or this person is not very understanding.
That's a good point to size them up visually. That's a good point to stop at. So there is, I mean, who knows how real it is, but you'll see memes on Bitcoin Twitter, or you go to conferences, and one aspect of, or one trait, I guess, of a lot of Bitcoiners is they're not people who regularly wear suit and ties. They're not the super clean cut Brooks Brothers, the type of person that you connect with being successful financially, successful education, that type of thing.
They don't look the part, and that's right.
So when you have these interactions with somebody, if you don't know them really well, right? Like, they're not a family member or a close friend or a colleague, they're more of a stranger or something, they're sizing you up too. So if you're trying to project this air of authority or subject matter expertise, you're trying to like establish that, you have to be cognizant of, if you look like a slob, even if slob is not the right word, even if you are just, you know, think of somebody who runs a company, is a CEO of a successful company or has a successful venture, but he moved to Costa Rica and he lives, you know, spends most of his time on the beach, drinking from coconuts, working remotely, has a long beard, greasy. Okay, like, we know people like that in the space. But if somebody who doesn't know you and doesn't have that background and doesn't have that percent, they see you as like, this guy's a lazy beach bum. Like, what does he know about anything? You have to take that into consideration. Like, the way you present your message includes the way you present yourself. So it doesn't mean that you can't be successful. It just means you have to tailor your approach based on how your message is going to be received, based on how you're delivering it and where you're delivering it from.
No, I agree. I 100% agree with all that. The question it made me think about was, before I fucking lose it, as you size people up, do you think that you can tell a no coiner from a coiner?
Well, I mean, yeah, if they have a Bitcoin t-shirt on or like the Bitcoin socks.
Okay, right? So
or
there's...
you're at a conference or that, you're at...
For sure, yeah.
But I think... I think you also... it'll be 2 seconds, 30 seconds into the conversation if you're trying to orange pill somebody.
But what if you don't get conversation? Can you tell if someone has a coin or not? Or like has coin or not?
I think you'll find that out pretty quickly if you start talking about Bitcoin and they immediately start talking about Bitcoin, unless they're...
Well, yeah. I'd just say on the subject, like, it's probably much easier for me to believe someone has a coin without even knowing who they are if they have certain, you know, meat-eating habits or, you know, care about look like they care about property or, like, wear a cowboy hat, things like this, like little visual cues of, like, people that care a little bit more
right,
about.
Right.
So I would assume like they would be open to the idea, even if they weren't, of Bitcoin.
Okay. To roll it back a little bit. I mean, I'm like, so if they already have Bitcoin, they're Bitcoiners, then they're orange pilling them there's no point in that. That's not kind of the point of orange pilling.
Yes.
But what you're saying is they look like Bitcoiners.
Not, yes. That's
how do
saying.
You tell if they have it? It's they yeah. look like they would
look
be
like Bitcoiners. That's
it.
What I'm saying. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that. Yeah. So but that's clear.
Anyway.
That, no, you're that's right.
A,
that's
it's,
right.
It's a tangent. You know,
but
it's a tangent.
Here's a perfect example.
You could size up no spoilers and you'd be able to
perfect. Yeah, but here's a perfect example of why that doesn't always work. Who is? Oh, I mean, it's a trope or it's a stereotype, Bitcoin and libertarian. Right,
yes.
But there's tons of libertarians, both, you know, just individuals who members of the party or just member people who vote that way or they have that political leaning, and there's like actual like influencers and thought leaders in the space from that libertarian space who totally reject Bitcoin. They hate it, and it's like every aspect of your ideology and just kind of your outlook on the world and the state and how to interact with the state and your feelings about taxes and freedom and sovereignty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the things that you think, wow, this person perfectly aligns with my message, tailored to what I think are libertarian. And then half the space is very not open to it. However, you also have very left-leaning and progressive people who are like super into Bitcoin that you would never, if they only had a brief interaction with them or you knew their political opinions, you would never guess. You know, people who are really big into climate change, right? You'd never guess it'd be that they were big Bitcoin supporters, but some of them are. and a lot of them are open to it. And it's so maybe you're wasting your time trying to convince somebody at some kind of libertarian party, or, you know, not the political party, but like, you know, a house party, a convention, a freedom festival, right? And maybe you actually would have more success with somebody you run into outside the climate conference in Seattle. You know, that's something to think about as well, is you're sizing somebody up and kind of projecting your idea of what they, you think they might like, or you think they might be inclined to agree with, can be totally wrong.
Typically, I am. Typically. Here's the thing. Okay, so, you know, you try to size someone up, you have a conversation with them. For instance, I have multiple conversations with my neighbor. My neighbor is a builder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I still can't get this dude to buy any Bitcoin. I talk about...
What does he say? What does he say?
Just here, let me sort of paint a picture of him. He cares about property rights. He's gun-toting. He's cooks meat, you know, heavily. So he has all of these sorts of touch points that I can go upon, like, I don't know, like the cost of the meat or the fucking cost of supplies for his construction business. You know, I go into all these like little areas. He cares about freedom a lot. So, you know, I try to hit him from that area. All of these tactics still haven't convinced this dude.
What is his response? What does he say when you bring these up?
He just listens. And then he might come back with something like, yeah, but if the government wants to, or yeah, but, you know, wouldn't they just shut it down, or blah, blah, blah.
So he's not really...
And then I come back...
It's not striking a chord.
No, yeah. I'm wondering...
This is... The point I'm kind of getting at here is that... And this is not just you. I've struggled with this myself. And I can tell by the discussion and hearing other people talk about their struggles in similar, you know, circumstances. But the main issue is that the approach in a lot of cases tends to be trying to sell somebody on this idea based on what you've sized up about them and what you, you know, what you expect they might value or they might care about. But what about just starting by asking them? Instead of immediately trying to solve a problem that you assume they have, that they may, maybe they have it, but they don't know they have it. They don't think of it as a problem. They're not concerned with it. It's not a priority to them. But what about the starting point just being asking them questions, getting to know them, getting to understand their values, getting to understand their worries, their anxieties, getting them to understand or getting to understand their level of knowledge about Bitcoin, about other aspects of personal finance, about their how much value they put into saving, how much they care about and know about inflation. I think it's probably the most effective strategy, or at least a very effective strategy, is to actually ask them and to understand them. And I think if you can start to do that, if you can start to understand what they care about and what they really value, you can have a better structured approach to the eventual introduction of trying to convince them or to explain to them how Bitcoin can help solve the problems they think they have or they feel that they have.
Yeah, I probably muddied the waters of my neighbor, I'll tell you that.
Sure.
Because, you know, he knows...
Have you ever actually asked him a question?
The Bitcoin, of course.
Or are you just show up and it was like, hey, listen to my podcast. Your meat will get cheaper if you stack sats. The price of steak is forever trending down to zero in Bitcoin terms.
So,
and he's like, what the fuck, dude?
What happens when you have, you know, that Uber drive for 7 minutes. Do you even, like, I find myself not even saying anything unless they ask me about what I do. And I say what I do, and then they, you know, maybe they might have some more questions about that.
Well, that's the other question. It's like,
it's a strategic, like, dance, you know.
Is it worth trying to orange pill every Uber driver that you have? Is it
that is a good question.
Right, like it's especially because there's a time limit on Uber. Maybe you're going to be in the car for 5 minutes, maybe an hour, but you know, yeah, you don't have to orange pill every person you meet. You don't have to talk about Bitcoin with every person you meet, but you can do little things like drop hints, like you mentioned, right? You mentioned what you do for a living. That's a thing that it's a very common question that people ask each other in small talk situations, Uber driver situations. What do you do? What's your job? Where are you traveling? Oh, is that for work? What do you do? And then you have the opportunity. Well, if you work for a Bitcoin company, like we do, that it's a very easy opportunity to broach the topic, right? And sometimes, I mean, usually when that topic comes up and you mention it, you can kind of gauge their reaction. Sometimes they're like, oh, okay. And all right, they bought some coins. Maybe they were trading on Coinbase. Maybe they heard about it on the news. Maybe they heard some crazy conspiracy theory, but they're interested in it. It's something they've thought about before, and they are now probably, you might be the first, unless you live in Austin, or certain other cities, you might be the first person they've ever met who works in the industry, who is an expert in the industry in their eyes. And that's an opportunity for them to talk about it more and ask you questions. And some people just don't give a shit. And it's...
People don't.
Right, most people don't. 90% of people don't. So it's, you know, in that situation, it's not about, well, how do I convince this person to care about this and listen to me while they're driving me to the airport? And it's like, that's probably not an encounter or a situation that is really that is going to be that high value anyway. So what's you know, your efforts spent on that.
It completely points out the value of curiosity, you know, and expressing the curiosity.
Right. You can tell if somebody's a curious person.
Because separate you from becoming being an NPC to not being an NPC. You know, this sure. aspect of wanting to know more.
Sure. I think maybe the even more broad point, whether it's taking the time to ask questions and to understand the other person so you can empathize with them. And if you have empathy with them, you have better rapport. You can build a level of trust through empathy. You can build a level of trust through, you know, similar background, similar experiences, similar approaches to the world. And that can kind of grease the wheels to make it easier. But it's not, you know, it's not that in and of itself is not going to determine success. It may determine more likelihood of success. But again, we got to go back to the original question that we asked. So in a 20-minute Uber ride, what is the metric of success? Is it productive to expect to change somebody's entire worldview as an Uber driver's, passenger in 20 minutes? I don't think so. I don't think that should be the goal.
You're right.
And if it isn't the goal, I assume that would change the entire way that you approach the situation. So maybe just mentioning that you work for a company, a bit like Swan, maybe that ends up being a successful interaction. Maybe because of that just brief answer, and then the fact that it's related to Bitcoin, they're like, I've been hearing about this lately in the news. I just heard it again from this guy. So like this, now it's not just on the TV or it's not just on my phone. It's somebody who I was sitting with in my car. Maybe now I'm going to look a little bit deeper into it. Maybe that's all it is. And maybe that is a 20 times more efficient, productive encounter than spending 20 minutes nagging them about the fact that they don't understand the history of money and what hard money is and why hard money is better than fiat. And you've just, those two sentences, three sentences I just said, I just threw a ton of jargon at somebody who may be not familiar with any of those terms. Yeah. And they're like, this person sounds like an idiot. I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm tuning this out. I am categorizing Bitcoin as crazy. Done. Boom.
You know that, yeah, that's an interesting thing that you hadn't thought of, which was sometimes I play the defensive on this topic, and I, wait for some sort of interaction about it, if it happens at all. And when I do, and if I get it, and if I get a question about it, I find myself going straight for the throat, going straight for the,
right.
Fiat is a scam.
It's like the movie American Pie, when he's got Shannon Elizabeth in his bedroom, and she just kind of like kneels over him on the bed.
Good analogy.
And instead of foreplay, he just blows his load. He goes straight for the kill. There's no sense of
strategy,
patience.
Yeah.
There's no sense of warm up anything. It's just boom, and it's right. It's like dial it back even more, broader. That is the whole meme or the whole concept or trope of the used car salesman, right? There's a lot of different sales techniques. There's a lot of different jobs in sales. You got like the Wolf of Wall Street guys, cold calling. Like those are the scammers. Those are the guys just hitting you up in your DMs on Twitter. Be like, how's your trade going? Send me Bitcoin. You got to buy this crypto coin that it's going to go to the moon. I promise. That's in your replies, right? Every time you post something, all the spam bots. That's a level of sales. You've got like the guys that work at some massive corporation. They're doing some sort of deal. Maybe it's a military contractor trying to get a multi-billion dollar contract with this other company. And like that sale does not occur because somebody cold called somebody at the Pentagon or somebody just met somebody on an elevator. It's like, hey, you're looking for $1 billion worth of cruise missiles? Well, guess what, buddy? Like, I got $1 billion worth of cruise missiles. I'm selling those. You should buy them. They're the hardest fucking cruise missiles ever fucking invented, right? It changes the entire history of warfare. Let me tell you about this entire history of warfare. We'll start with spears, and we'll work up to missiles, and this is why my missiles are the best. That's not how it works, right? Like, it's multi interaction. I mean, it's multiple months, maybe multiple years of relationship building, trust yeah. building, empathy, understanding yeah. the customer's needs. Think back to what was the other example I was thinking of? In the venture capital space, the startup space. Startup founders go to investors. They do have like cold pitches where you show up to a board and you present your company's idea, your company's product, and you ask for money. Those meetings do occur, but almost never, and in rare circumstances, if you already have a very, very good reputation as a startup founder or something like that, you might get a check from somebody like Sequoia or some angel investor, like, some grandmother. You might get that, sure. But most big, investments in startups and founders is only after a process of getting to know the founder and the investors, getting to know each other, getting to see how they operate, how they run their business, how they think about their cash flows, their profits, how well they understand all the financial nuances of running a business and what their plan is, what their vision is for their product, and how they're going to scale, how they're going to bring it to market, what those person's family life is like. Families get together, they meet, they spend time together. They think, is this the person I want to invest in? Is this somebody who I want to spend time with and helping build a company? Is this worth my time and my money? Is it worth my sanity? Is it worth, yada, yada, yada. It's a long process. So you're going for the throat in the first 10 seconds, you have built no relationship, empathy, or understanding of that person whatsoever. You are a used car salesman who sees a potential customer on the lot, goes out to them, says, I'm going to give you this Mitsubishi Eclipse, 1997, 14 motor replacements, 250,000 miles, but it runs like it's brand new. You know what? It's marked for $10,000. I'm going to give you a deal. I'll give it to you for $9,999. What do you say? You want to buy it? And the person is just like, they want to get off. I mean, that whole used car salesman job, that industry is pretty much gone now because it was such a negative experience for the customers involved that it was disrupted super easily by like Carvana and just like going on Craigslist and looking for a car because you didn't want to deal with somebody who was just, you know, another, like a similar to car salesman, like those people. Maybe you're from New York, you live in LA, you don't know too many of these people, but especially if you live in the Midwest or a less populous area, you got those, like the person you went to high school with who's selling some Ponzi scheme, like essential oils thing. And they're just blowing you up on Facebook. Like, let me tell you about, you know, how you can make money joining my affiliate marketing team. And it's like, they're just trying to sell you. They're just trying to turn a profit. They're just trying to convert a sale. And that's what you may come across as to some of these people who are like, this dude is just trying to pump his bags and then dump on me when the price is up. And I'm the sucker. He's just trying to make me, I'm just a sucker to him. He's trying to pump his bags. That's what they might, you know, it's what they most likely, how they perceive you. Even your own like family members. Like if you haven't seen your uncle in 2 years or your cousin and you show up at Thanksgiving, you're just like, you got to buy this coin. This is going to make you rich. I did it. You got to get this. And they're just like, dude, leave me alone.
Whereas your intentions may be completely opposite.
Right.
You know,
intentions don't matter.
Yeah.
As much as, what you think your intentions are, maybe it's worth evaluating your own intentions based on how you're approaching selling this to other people. Why are you trying to sell this to another person? Why are you trying to sell it to your Uber driver? Why are you, this is a question, not a rhetorical one anymore. Why are you, Michael, trying to convince your Armenian Uber driver in Los Angeles to buy Bitcoin? And here's another thing to think about. A lot of, especially true for like American Bitcoiners, right? They meet somebody from Costa Rica, El Salvador, Africa, you know, an Armenian immigrant, Asian, whatever. Somebody who's, whether or not they feel this way or whether or not they're racist or not, it's not what I'm talking about. But it's like you meet somebody like that, you're like, oh, your country is a mess. Your currency is bullshit. You're not from a great country like me. You need Bitcoin. How are you? You got to use this. This is so much better than the bullshit you got back home. I heard on the news there's inflation. You can barely buy a loaf of bread in Turkey.
I've never used this tactic, by the way.
So even if it's not as in your face and like brazen as what I said, you can see it. You can sense that condescension, but it's also on top of the condescension. It's like the global South needs Bitcoin. They're stupid if they use stable coins. Those are shit coins. They're going to get scammed. It's like, well, people are using Tether. This is not a promotion of Tether by any means. My point is, if you don't understand why somebody's using that in Argentina, it's going to be difficult for you to convince them or to orange pill them about Bitcoin because you're not even taking the time to care or understand what their actual problems are and what the solutions they're actually looking for.
That was good. Can I tell you what you made me think of? You asked me this question, which is why am I trying to pitch Bitcoin to my Uber driver? And I don't do it, you know, that often, but when I do, it's a good question to ask yourself. And a part of me is thinking it's to solidify my own conviction in the matter.
That's a good point. That's true. That is true. A lot of the orange pilling, or just the people telling other people about Bitcoin, they're the ones who really, you personally, right? You're the one that needs to be sold on it. You're the one that needs to be orange pilled a little bit more. You're the one who's got maybe having a crisis of conviction, and you're trying to convince yourself, but directing it towards somebody else. So you're basically perfect trying point. To orange pill perfect somebody. Point. You're trying to orange pill somebody based on your anxiety. Your anxiety about inflation, your anxiety about keeping up with, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. That person may or may not have the same struggles, same anxieties, but it doesn't matter, because you're not even pitching a solution to those anxieties, because their anxieties, while they may come from a similar source, are not the same. You don't approach it the same way. You don't think about it the same way. You haven't thought about a solution to it the same way. So if you're trying to assuage your own anxieties through, you know, a sales pitch to somebody else, it's, doubtful to be very effective.
So then it seems like the proper approach, and certainly, keeps people interested in asking more, is probably reservation. Reservation is the key to getting this concept across. Because what you're saying is when you're becoming the used car salesman, why do we not like used car salesmen? Because they exude, amongst the other things that you said, they exude this.
They're pushy.
This aura of desperation is what I think.
Yes. And it's not just used car salesman, right? It's even in the dating world, within the context of a relationship, established relationship, whether it's in a professional environment, when you're desperate, people can sense that. And then if you're desperate and they can sense it, well, now they're probably wondering, why is he desperate? What is causing this desperation? And then you're trying to sell them, well, his desperation and anxiety is manifesting in him trying to sell me this thing that he thinks is going to be his like financial, escape, or his financial solution to his problems. It's not the financial, he's made no case for why this is the financial solution to my problems. He doesn't know what my problems are. He doesn't know anything about me, but he's trying to make some money off of me. Not, you know, obviously that person buying Bitcoin is not going to be enough to pump your bags in and of itself, but it's just this desperation that, please, just $5 would help me. You agreeing with why I think this is important helps me. This is my benefit, not your. So yeah, you're basically communicating or signaling to the other person, this whole conversation is for my benefit, not yours.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just, you know, yeah, it's like somebody hitting you up on LinkedIn. Can you get me a job at the company you work for? Can you introduce me to this person who you know in the industry? Well, I don't know you. Why are you, you're trying to use me for your benefit. What do I get out of this?
Right.
You haven't been a friend to me. You haven't been reliable. You haven't given me anything. I owe you nothing. Why should I help you? Why should I care about what you need? What you want, what you think is priority.
It's such an ugly emotion to see on someone.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a zombie's coming after you. You know,
it's like a simp.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's very off-putting.
It's a sign of weakness.
Right.
For sure.
It's think back to this this drama last week between Odell and Saylor, and Odell said that Saylor didn't.
What was
support.
This drama? I keep hearing about this thing.
Yeah,
just give me the clip.
So, the rundown is just simply Odell posted on Nostr. He doesn't have Twitter anymore. Posted on Nostr that Saylor is. I don't remember it verbatim, but it was essentially Saylor threatened to crush an ETF issuer. I think it was allegedly ARK. So Cathie Wood, her ETF, really? Her Bitcoin ETF. If they support it, because a lot of the ETFs issuers were pledging to support a certain percentage of the fees revenue that they got from the Bitcoin ETFs.
Yeah.
To pledge it towards open source developers, Bitcoin Core developers, to kind of like a give back. It's a PR marketing stunt.
So an ETF, ETF is saying
like BlackRock, VanEck, ARK, other. I don't know.
Right, I've heard this.
Bitwise is one of them. They're going to donate to Core Devs, right?
Core Devs.
So Odell claimed that Saylor privately spoke with ARK or one. I think that was the ETF, and threatened them or tried to convince them not to do that. And more, you know, none of this has been confirmed. None of it's been denied. It's all hearsay and rumors. Even if Saylor did make some sort of try to persuade them or convince them or threaten them not to fund Cordell developers, you know, we don't know the details, but that's the claim.
What's the incentive for that?
Again, what's Saylor's incentive or what's Odell's incentive?
What's the incentive for Saylor to?
So these, it's again
to block that.
The speculation has been people have shared previous comments, previous statements that have been made by Saylor regarding his opinion about continued development of the Bitcoin protocol. And should be clarified that there is a distinction between the development that goes on for Bitcoin, the protocol, in terms of bug fixing for the software, you know, patching vulnerabilities, making updates that are more maintenance related, and then there's a difference between experimenting, researching, developing, and potentially forking and upgrading the consensus protocol aspect of Bitcoin.
So that makes more sense as to why that's a good incentive to have,
right,
for him.
And so there's a movement called the ossification supporters or the ossification movement. And ossification I think it's a biological term. So it's like the bone calcifies and hardens, like maybe over an injury or maybe like just it calcifies and it becomes kind of inert. It stops growing. It stops changing. Just becomes this hardened structure. And so that's kind of the analogy that people kind of make for it's an analogy for software protocols as well, where the core use case or the core system, it stops being iterated on, it stops being developed, they stop having soft forks, you stop having upgrades. You would still fix bugs. You would still make sure things were compatible with like current, versions of Linux or changes that might be made to the broader internet protocols like TCP, IP. I mean, I'm just throwing out random examples here, but it's not that you would never add any more code to Bitcoin Core. It's just that you would stop altering the consensus mechanism. For an example, changing the supply cap to increase it from 21 million to something else would be a consensus change that would require a fork, a hard fork. Some things are backwards compatible. They would only require, like covenants would require a soft fork, but that would still be not something you would do in an ossification scenario.
Good.
So anyways, but the incentive is like, these big consensus changes impose risks yes. that could risk the integrity, the security, the usefulness of Bitcoin, and therefore Saylor's multi billions of dollars in investment in Bitcoin is put at risk if the protocol stops being as valuable because something breaks. So that that's the incentive, right?
Going back to what you were on about before I asked the question, what's the thing with Odell and Michael Saylor? Where were you on that? I forgot. You said even, you were like, even Matt, even Odell and Michael Saylor are, you know, have this, what were we fucking talking about then? We were talking about, we're back to the orange pilling. We have to go back to right. that. We were, so that's what we were talking about. And we were talking about the used car salesman.
Anyways, I think we're not going to get back to it. You sidetracked me too much. But either way, so my point there in even bringing it up was not to simps. We're talking about simps, right?
Oh,
so
thank you.
As a result nice. Of as That's a recovery. Result of that drama, right? There's a lot of people, again, like how I mentioned, none of this was verified, denied, proven, verified, anything like that. It was all just gossip essentially in the community.
Okay.
And drama in the community. But nevertheless, certain people aligned on the Odell side, certain people aligned on the Saylor side. And people, you know, defending Saylor. Oh, this is no, there's no evidence that this came out. Saylor never said this. That's not what Saylor believes. Again, just speculating and projecting what is what mostly what they're doing, but some of it is simp behavior. And it's whether you were a simp for Odell, a simp for Saylor, that you say we were talking about like that desperation or that you kind of have that unattractive quality. Well, simping behavior is, again, it is partially, I think, due to your own personal insecurity, right? So like if Saylor was the person who orange pilled you, or you listened to a lot of his, you know, podcasts, or you thought he was just, what he had to say was really brilliant and it really changed your perspective and got you into Bitcoin. There's probably a sense of if Saylor isn't perfect, or if Saylor's wrong, or if Saylor isn't the righteous actor that I have ascribed him to being, right? Then maybe everything that I think about Bitcoin, which is based on what he said about it, maybe I was wrong. Maybe Bitcoin isn't what as strong as I thought it is. Maybe it's not going to be as valuable as I thought it was going to be. Maybe there's an error, you know, in my judgment if Saylor's fallible. And it's not just Saylor, right? It's like you talk about in Bitcoin a lot, slaying your heroes and having to be able to be, to understand and have enough conviction because of your own critical thought, your own research, that even if Saylor was wrong, if he's a huge idiot, some people think he's in it. Some people are not as impressed with his intellectual, you know, prowess. But it doesn't matter. At a certain point, you have to be able to just be like, well, even if Saylor goes off the deep end, or he turns on us, it doesn't matter. Saylor doesn't matter to Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't care. Maybe you can still like Saylor, respect Saylor. Maybe you have a lot of respect for him. But the point is that you have to get past this point of being a simp, where you're just gonna reflexively defend and fight for, you know, the personality. He's a billionaire. He doesn't need your support. He's a very successful, very wealthy person. He's got a huge mansion in Miami, yachts. I'm not saying he doesn't care. He doesn't care about you personally. Maybe if you know him personally and your friends, that's one thing, but a billionaire don't have to care about you. You know what I mean? So like, he'll be fine no matter what happens to Bitcoin. He'll still be fine. And he doesn't need you to defend him. And if you are defending him, and people are calling you a simp, it might be related to your own anxieties. So if you are orange pilling or making arguments, trying to convince other people, because convincing other people makes you feel like you're right, because mm-hmm. other people agree, right? And so we've had this conversation on the show before about where does knowledge come from? Where does wisdom come from? Yeah, I mean, briefly, but it's
probably with Red Tail Hawk or somewhere.
A lot of people look for evidence or signs of information being correct or right or wrong, or based on how other people, but what other people think about it, instead of looking from within and trying to learn about anything, whether it's Bitcoin or something else, and to understand it. And to be able to explain it to yourself, to others, to play out the game theory, to understand the technical protocol, how to use it how to use a note, all that stuff, right? Doing it yourself rather than, well, what does this person think about this this upgrade proposal or this soft fork or this shitcoin? Because whatever they think about it is that I'm going to just blindly follow their lead because I think they know more than I do.
It's a gradation of...
It's trust, not Bitcoiner. It's verify, don't trust.
You are as much of a Bitcoiner as you are. You know, there.
Yeah.
Everything you said, like you can go on a scale and a range. It's an interesting thought. It's like what it really... This is like a total tangent. So if you have another idea, maybe you want to come in. But
no, I think we can jump to the next point after you go on this tangent. I think it's a great segue.
Cool. What it made me think about, I was having this conversation with a lawyer friend, and he was telling me, he's a Jewish man, and he was telling me about the practices of Judaism and how deep he goes into that and like what he can eat, what he can't, you know, when he goes to his, you know, synagogue, all this kind of stuff, how often. And it made me think of like, were the Jews, like, they formed this law, right? These Ten Commandments. Now, I'm sure there's several other civilizations, but the monotheistic nature, you know, of the Jews and what has spawned from that came with like a set of laws. And you could be like, how much of a Jew you were. This is what I thought. Maybe this is how it was back in the day, but how much of a Jew you were was like how many of these laws you respected and right. How many of them you broke. So it makes me, it's just related, you know, that just made me think of like what a Bitcoiner is, you know?
That's another dynamic where people feel the need to blend in, or they feel the need to express certain values to be considered, you know, accepted or to be considered a Bitcoiner by other people.
Right.
And there's a lot of Bitcoiners who they don't participate in any of that. They just they use it. It's a tool to them. Bitcoin is a lot of things to different people. Sure.
Can I just point out, it's like, it's the question, how much do you believe in Jesus? You know, like how
it's faith. So faith is now we've talked about this with Rigel, right? Bitcoin is a religious phenomenon. There's a lot of value, arguably, but I think I tend to agree with them. There's a lot of value in that social layer, in that embedding it into some kind of broader culture and system of values. But while there might be value to that, and it may provide you value individually, faith kind of usually signifies like lack of understanding or lack of conviction based on empirical evidence, understanding the protocol, really understanding the technicals of how it works, understanding mining and how mining works and how UTXOs work and how to manage UTXOs, things like that. The more you know and the more deeply you understand the protocol and how to use it, and the more I tend to see people like that view it more as a tool, and people who have a very limited understanding and ability to interact with it, but who buy it and need it and use it for protecting their savings or trying to survive financially, tend to, you know, put a lot of faith and see it less of a tool.
Well, I'm certainly in that camp, for sure.
Sure, right, exactly. So. But I think it's, before we kind of wrap this up, we talked about, maybe to summarize this, we talked about what is your approach? How do you decide who, to have a conversation with, should you try to orange pill? How do you measure success? What are you trying to accomplish in 5 minutes, 20 minutes? Maybe you have a lot of opportunity to speak with that person and, continue to discuss it like your neighbor. But you know, trying to gauge why are you even trying to talk to this person about it? What are you trying to get out of it? Who is it for? You know, what is the message? What is your measure of success? And like, don't go for the throat. Don't try to change somebody's entire worldview in 20 minutes. But let's get past, like, not every interaction is a failure, or not every, sometimes you start speaking to somebody about it and they're very open to it and they buy it and they keep buying it. They're stacking it. And like, then there's almost like this weird position that you get into. And I think a lot of people had this at the beginning of the last bear market. There's a lot of expression for it where they got their whole family or somebody to like liquidate, pay the penalty to liquidate their retirement account and go all in on Bitcoin at the top. And then it crashes. And then they had their families mad at them. Their friends are mad at them. People are, even if they're not, that person's not explicitly like upset with you or blaming you. Maybe they never even mention it. And I think I had a tweet about this. Was like, some friends I talk to, or some people I'm more close and have, and I talk to more often during bear markets, and some people during bull markets, because it's almost like there might be friends in bull markets who didn't listen to me, who knew I was in Bitcoin. Maybe I tried to orange pill them and they dismissed it. And then they stop reaching out to me so much when the Bitcoin price is ripping, because they feel like, oh shit, I should have listened, or he's gonna gloat. Even if I don't do that. Or there might be people in the bear market who it's like, well, I put a bunch of my savings into this and it crashed. This dude basically wrecked me, made me lose my savings. I don't want to talk to this guy anymore. Fuck him. Right. But then there's, but if you orange pilled somebody and this happens, right, and maybe this is an indication of understanding you had the wrong intentions, right? Maybe there was somebody who was you knew you could easily influence, somebody who would listen to you, somebody who trusted you. And instead of correctly guiding them, teaching them, giving them the right resources, properly explaining how this can benefit them and what they have to do, right? Like, is nobody wants to, nobody or very few people like when they have to bring up, all right, now you got to self-custody. Now you got to buy this $150 hardware wallet. Now you got to remember 12 words. If you lose it, your money's gone forever.
Barriers.
There's
of
a
entry,
lot of work
for sure,
involved.
Yeah.
You got to use a node. A lot of people don't want to bring that up, right? So maybe if you're orange pilling somebody who's kind of a captive audience, maybe it's your little brother who's going to listen to anything you say, and you're going to get him to spend as much money as you can get him to spend on Bitcoin. And your intentions in your mind are good. Like, this is ultimately going to go up over time. It's going to be a good investment. But again, you didn't ask any questions. You didn't get to know their personal situation, their needs, their wants, their anxieties. So they ape way too much into it. They don't have the psychological stability and fortitude to handle the bear market. And they sold everything at the bottom. And now they blame you. Or they don't blame you and you just feel guilty anyway, because you know that they only did this because you convinced them to do it. And you didn't really set them up for success. You didn't slowly lead them into this so that they could build their own conviction and understanding and get to understand this protocol. And maybe that's because you personally don't understand it well enough to help them to that point. Maybe you don't have the ability to teach them how to use a cold card or to create a multi-sig wallet or to consolidate their UTXOs. And if they come to you and ask for help, you're not going to be able to help them. They're going to be like, well, why the hell am I listening? You don't even know what you're doing, right? So there's a lot of dynamics here. It's a nuanced thing, and only you know the situation. But you get to these points, and there's a lot of pressure, and you have a lot of responsibility, because now this person has a lot invested in it, and they look to you to shepherd them through the volatility, shepherd them through the complexities, shepherd them through the risks, and hackers are after me. Then what do you do, right? How do you handle the hard parts? How do you handle, it's easy to get somebody to, right? Like in college football, the coach is really nice. He's courting the recruit, taking the family out to a steak dinner, just being like sharing all the opportunities that are going to be there. And then somebody shows up, they show up to boot camp and you're an asshole and you got to like send them to do two-a-day workouts and they're miserable and they changed their whole life. They moved across the country. They dedicated everything to your program, your football team. But now you got to ask them to do things that hurt, do things that maybe they don't want to do, maybe they're not ready to do. How do you coach them? How do you guide them? How do you help them self-custody? How do you help them use a note? How do you help them back up and use their security? What do you do then? That's a lot of pressure. And a lot of people are really, really eager to orange pill people. And it's fun when you orange pill some people and the bull market hits and everybody's making money. But it's not always smooth sailing. It's like, what is your plan to help them and be a resource and to continue the orange pilling process when everything is falling apart?
Well, I think the best plan then would probably be to learn more about it yourself.
Keep reserved. No, I agree. But my question would be to you rhetorically and to you personally is, why is it taken till now? Why is it taken till now? Why have you been in Bitcoin for years? Why can't you recite for me the different spend scripts? Why can't you recite for me the different, you know, address types, the different multi-signature approaches? What's the difference between SegWit and legacy addresses? Why is one cheaper? What is the block subsidy? What is the difficulty adjustment? What happens if the hash rate plummets right after a difficulty adjustment that makes the difficulty really high? What happens if, you know, Lightning, yada yada, et cetera, et cetera? What if?
That is a very good set of resources to be able to create for someone or something.
To know how to
do all this. Because
I guess
everything you're saying, I mean, I would probably be able to answer, you know, 20% of those questions that you ask.
Yeah.
And as a person who believes in this protocol, I should be able to answer at least 70, you know.
My question would be, why do you believe in this protocol if you can't answer those questions? Because those questions are the protocol. Those questions that I ask are like, it's like asking a Jew the fundamental questions that, I guess I don't know an example of a question in Judaism, but in Christianity, it's like, what is the cross? Why is Jesus on a cross? What does that mean? What happened there? What's the backstory there? What's Noah's flood? What is, you know, this and that? And if I couldn't answer that, you're like, well, why are you a Christian? Why are you so sure that you're going to, that this worldview or this religion is correct? You don't even know about it. You don't even know anything about it.
Hmm. It's a great question. I mean, I could answer it for myself.
Right. But I guess the broader point I'm making is before you go on an orange pilling spree, again, what are your reasons? Why are you doing this? What are your intentions for orange pilling them? Because if you don't have a plan for after they've made a huge investment and you're the person that influenced it and you're the person they're going to look to when it drops 70% in a month, if you're not ready to deal with that, maybe you're not ready to orange pill them. Because you could say, in this, you know, it goes back to a very maybe naive understanding, but you might answer like, well, as long as they just get off zero and they get some Bitcoin, like that is preferable to them not ever doing that, for them to be stuck in the fiat system. And that kind of ignores the reality of the situation, which is that's not necessarily true, because if they put way too much into it, then they can reasonably afford to psychologically, financially, and then it drops and they sell at the bottom and they're in a much worse position than they were before. They didn't get any benefit from Bitcoin. It damaged their life greatly. Not that Bitcoin, it's not Bitcoin's fault, but it is in some ways could be, you could argue that it's your fault that you convinced somebody to do something that was against their interest, not because Bitcoin's against their interest, but because you didn't prepare them and teach them enough about it.
Well,
responsibility to do that either. I mean, that's none of this is illegal, right? It's like all ethical and philosophical.
It throws out the idea that maybe we should not be doing this. You know, perhaps we should not be orange pilling. Perhaps we should, you know, be like the soldier or be like the Stoic, you know, that
or be
continues to learn their own and guide their own path and continues to get better on their own way.
Be an example of a living example.
Yeah.
Right? This is an element of Christianity. It's don't proselytize and go about and try to convert people. It's not a successful endeavor most of the time. Sometimes it can be dangerous. But what you can do and what you should do is be a living example. So if you buy Bitcoin, if that's a major part of your ideology of your beliefs, well, somebody should be able to look at your life and see whether or not Bitcoin has been a benefit to you. If it's a benefit, if you have your shit together, if you're healthy, if it's family, you have savings, you have confidence, you have conviction. If you have your whole savings, all of your money in Bitcoin, and you are utilizing it effectively, you're using wisdom, you're using it to be successful, to purchase freedom and time, to benefit your family, to benefit your just overall situation, especially if you were kind of in a certain state and then you found Bitcoin and everything progressed and you improved your life dramatically. If all that's true and you are this much into Bitcoin and you don't even feel compelled to mention it in a conversation with them, that's probably going to be more effective at like, well, there's something to this. There's some value to this. I want to ask them about it. They haven't tried to sell it to me. They've just used it successfully and to their benefit. Right.
To their own benefit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're living the life that you want to live. You're doing the things you want to do. You're saying the things and standing up for the things you want to stand up for. You have the courage and conviction in your life to just do everything you want to do and be successful at it. What is the secret? Maybe it's not all Bitcoin, but that's an element to it.
Shall we wrap it up, brother?
Yeah.
Where can we find us?
If you're listening to this, when you know where you can find us.
Oh man, this is such a cool project. I have to say, I'm looking forward to hearing the other podcasters on this one.
Me too.
How will it be released? How is this whole thing supposed to be released?
I'm not having. That's the point. We already discussed
I know that.
This.
I know the date, but like, is it all coming out on Why Bitcoin podcast? Is it all?
No, if it's on the same RSS feed, that all.
We're all just releasing our own distributed.
Yeah, that's how podcasts work. Yeah.
I guess you're right.
you just release a podcast on the RSS feed, and people listen to it. Yeah. Nothing's changed about distributions.
Oh, man. It's a good night, man.
For sure.
That was good talk. I'll cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Toledo!